I'm very happy to welcome to our program Dr. Susan Rogers, an advisor to the group Physicians for a National Health Program. And Dr. Susan Rogers, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm delighted to do this.
Yeah, and you're based out of Chicago, right?
Yes, I am.
And what's your medical specialty?
Well, I am a general internist, and I have been practicing for, I guess it's close to 40 years now, and most of it has been at Cook County Hospital here in Chicago, and I have been in primary care a lot of those years, and then the last part of it has been as a hospitalist, which is inpatient medicine.
Well, again, thanks. I know you're busy, so appreciate you doing this tonight. Tell our listeners a bit about the group that you advise, Physicians for a National Health Program.
Well, Physicians for a National Health Program was started back in the early 80s by a group of physicians. Dr. Quentin Young was one of the early physicians who did that. And he was one of the founding members who created this along with Dr. Wolfhandler in Boston. And what it was it founded on single payer.
Oops.
And single payer is where there is a single payer for the...
Dr. Rogers, there's a...
I'm sorry, there was a problem with the door. It's connected to the phone. Okay. Yeah, but single payer is where... It's like Medicare for All, where there's a single payer, which is the government, that covers everyone, but it's delivered in a private setting. And so what the organization has done is tried to promote that. We've had... there's been multiple articles, but what it's done is... It's really gathered a lot of physicians. There's over 20,000 physicians who are members of this, who support the single-payer movement. And we also include a lot of ancillary healthcare staff who are in it. There's a lot of nurses, other healthcare workers. A lot of medical students now are becoming involved in this. And that's what we do. We're national, so we have chapters in many cities throughout the country. And we're very active. We're based here in Chicago. That's where the national office is.
Well, thanks for that, Dr. Rogers. I just wanted to ask you to summarize, if you would, the latest version of the Republican Senate proposal for repealing and replacing Obamacare. Maybe just go over some of the key elements and the things that have alarmed the Physicians for a National Health Program, but also many groups across the country, including the American Medical Association.
Yeah, well, this bill is, it is as close to health care reform as an elephant is to a mouse. I mean, there is no reform in that bill at all. All it does is it decimates Medicaid in order to subsidize tax benefits to the wealthy. One of the misconceptions about the Affordable Care Act is that that's been the cause for insurance premiums to rise, deductibles to rise, copayments for care to rise. But all of that started way before the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act did not cause that. It may have perpetuated it and made it happen a little bit faster. But this new bill does not do any change to how health care is delivered. All it does is it provides a way to cut benefits, to provide less coverage to people, so that people end up buying an insurance policy that essentially offers them no coverage. There's a lot of benefits that the Affordable Care Act did do, like allowing children to stay on their parents' policy till they're 26. It required some benefits that needed to be included, such as maternity care, physical therapy, long-term care, a whole variety of things that they've now taken out so that insurance companies don't have to provide this. So what it does is it says it's an insurance policy, but it's really not insuring people, because what they've done is to make it affordable, they've deleted the benefits. And then Medicaid, which is a big provider of health care, they've just decimated, and the number of people who are now going to be uninsured is going to be phenomenal.
Dr. Rogers, explain to our audience, as a physician yourself, what happens when someone buys a one of these substandard insurance policies that may not cover much at all, you know, in terms of serious illnesses or long-term treatment? There's a lot of people walking around today who are very healthy, but, you know, an accident or a sudden illness can take them straight into bankruptcy unless they have health care coverage or comprehensive health care coverage. But in your experience as a doctor, why would you advise a young or healthy person not to get one of these substandard policies?
Well, the thing is, what it is it's a policy that covers little benefits. It may be that it doesn't cover a lot of benefits, but it also makes you responsible for a large amount of the payment that's due for whatever care you need. Deductibles are higher. In order to lower the premium, you have a higher deductible, and you have people with $6,000 and $7,000 deductibles that they can't afford. So essentially, you're buying a policy that you can't afford to use should you need to use it. And when you think about the whole purpose of insurance of any kind is to prevent financial catastrophes. And this is doing the exact opposite. You're paying a premium to an insurance company that's going to get paid every month, yet you're left with a product that you're not able to use should you need it because you can't afford your share of the cost. And what's happened with the Republicans is they've come up with these policies where your share of the cost becomes bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where you can't afford it. And so it's useless. You're buying a useless product.
Now,
it may cover some things, but you're still left with such out-of-pocket expenses that you're still devastated, and not only are you still sick, but you're also bankrupt.
And, Dr. Rogers, one of the other elements in this Republican proposal in the Senate would be consistent with the previous House version as well as the earlier Senate version, which it still maintains the design to really destroy Medicare as we've known it for many decades. Maybe you could speak to what the net effect of these major, almost $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid would have on the population.
Oh, that would be enormously devastating. And I think what people don't realize is that Medicaid is not just a provider of health care to people who are poor, many of whom are children, but it's also a big provider of health care to the elderly who need long-term care, who need nursing home care. A lot of that is done through Medicaid, not Medicare, but Medicaid. So you've got a lot of elderly, I mean almost 30% of people who are on Medicaid may be the elderly. So it's not just poor people or just poor children who benefit from Medicaid. And by making these cuts, now you've got a group of people who have nowhere else to go. The other thing that's often not realized, too, is that when there's national disasters, when you've got hurricanes, when you had, like, the flood in New Orleans from Katrina, the majority of people who lived in the parishes that were affected by that flood were on Medicaid. So now you've got, if you didn't have Medicaid, these people would have had absolutely nothing. There would have been no support system at all. And that's what happens when you have these natural disasters. And people don't think about Medicaid as helping people like that, people who normally would not need the services of the Medicaid, but whose lives get devastated because of these natural events. Now become they need to become recipients of Medicaid. And so what will happen is now you would have so many millions of people who have relied on Medicaid for basic services would now get nothing. And it's just unconscionable. I mean, it's just cruel. I don't even know the words for it.
Well, I certainly want to talk about the larger issue here in a moment about health care as a human right. But before I get there, there's another couple of things I just wanted to ask you about, and that is, with these devastating cuts under Medicaid, what would the net effect be on rural hospitals across the country, as well as nursing homes? I've heard that both of those institutions are really concerned about these dramatic cuts in Medicaid and what would happen to them.
Yeah, like I mentioned, that there's a large percentage of people on Medicaid are the elderly who are dependent on Medicaid to pay for their nursing homes. And in a lot of rural communities where a lot of their patients are Medicaid recipients, and that is the revenue that those hospitals get, they would not get paid for any of the services. And it's not just in rural communities. There's neighborhoods. I'm here in Chicago where there's now medical deserts because Medicaid doesn't reimburse right now enough to maintain a lot of those institutions. But if Medicaid was no longer in existence, those facilities would close. It was just like there was a hospital in North Carolina that was on the coast, I think, and when North Carolina didn't take the Medicaid expansion and this hospital closed, there was a woman who died because she went to the hospital, they were closed, and she died en route to another hospital. She was a young woman, she was in her 40s, and because of that, the Republican governor ended up making a march to Washington to try to get the Republicans there to change the way they looked at health care, but he obviously was not successful. So the ripple effect of the loss of Medicaid is difficult to really visualize because I think it's going to be so expansive.
We're speaking with Dr. Susan Rogers, an advisor to the group Physicians for a National Health Program, and we're summarizing some of the elements of this proposed repeal and replace legislation coming out of the Republican Senate, their second version. A vote has been delayed because of some health concerns for Senator McCain of Arizona. And a CBO score has not yet been released by the Congressional Budget Office. But previous versions of the Republican health care bills have received CBO scores that indicate upwards of 22, 23 million people would lose their health insurance coverage.
Exactly.
And Dr. Rogers, I wanted to ask you, what is the link between the loss of health insurance and the mortality rate? How many people are expected to die in this country when millions more will not have health insurance in the coming years?
It's actually going to be a lot. Right now, there's almost 30,000 people a year who die because of lack of insurance, and that number will only escalate. It's predicted that about one person for every, I think it's 700 people who are uninsured may die. So that it's a high number, and it's clear that lack of access to care because you don't have insurance greatly impacts your health. There's no question. I think one of the things we also need to realize, too, is that even with insurance, we are not a healthy country. Our life expectancy is almost 50 when you look at the list of industrialized countries. So even people who have insurance, people who are supposed to be healthy and have access, don't live as long. Our infant mortality rate is still higher than many industrialized countries, and it's also higher than many third world countries. So even though we supposedly have this phenomenal healthcare system, we don't have the benefits that a lot of other industrialized countries do, like a longer life expectancy and an infant mortality rate that's lower.
Well, thank you for that, Dr. Rogers. I did want to ask you this larger question. Certainly, the Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare has focused a lot of national attention on the question of whether or not healthcare is a human right. And the Republicans certainly, by and large, have come down in opposition to the notion that people have a right to get healthcare when they're sick. How has this debate, in your view, moved opinion if at all, in the direction of people around the country now believing that healthcare is a human right, as it is in most of the other industrialized nations of the world who have a universal healthcare system of some kind in place.
Yes. Well, PNHP, the Physicians for National Health Program, clearly believe that health care is a right. And like you say, more and more people are believing that, too. But a lot of the country does not, especially the Republicans who are sponsoring this bill. And one of the things that they promote is this argument that the market forces will finally stabilize health care costs and will solve this whole healthcare problem, and that competition in buying health insurance policies will, the competition itself will help lower costs. But it doesn't do that, because that does nothing to what the market allows things to be, what the market allows things to cost. If we look at what we pay in this country, for example, for a chest x-ray, we pay maybe 10 times as much as other industrialized countries with a single-payer system. Same thing for everything. A cardiac bypass can cost 3 to 4 times as much here in this country. And it's not any better here than it is elsewhere. So the whole idea that the market can control costs or lower costs has not been ever proven, because you can't look at healthcare as a commodity like, for instance, the auto insurance, the auto industry. Part of it is because they talk about this competition in buying policies so you can get what you think you need, but you don't know what you will need. I don't know if I'm going to need my health insurance next week. And if I do, I don't know for what. So to predict that is an impossibility. It's not like a car. I know what size car I need. I know what size house I need. I know what kind of shoes I need. There, the market makes a difference. But in healthcare, where you don't know what your needs are, which is why you need to be insured for everything. You don't know if you're going to break a leg, if you're going to come down with a heart attack, if you're going to have leukemia. You don't know. And so you need to be covered for all of those things. That's the whole point of health insurance, to keep you healthy. And if you become sick, to treat that illness and hopefully get your health back. So this whole concept, this whole basis that the market can solve this, which is the basis of what they're trying to do, is a fallacy. It's been proven not to work. And even if you look at this country, where are the resources for health care? The resources are in areas of this country where people can get paid. And if you look in a city like Chicago, you have much better resources in a wealthier community, because those patients tend to have better insurance. And so the places there will get reimbursed better versus poor communities. So the market has shown you that that's where the services go. So you can see that the market forces are creating some of the disparities that are occurring in this country between people who have insurance and people who don't, people who have Medicaid, which is a horrendously low reimbursement, which is why a lot of physicians don't like to take Medicaid patients, because they don't get paid to even cover their costs. So It's the whole fallacy of the health insurance company that can be health insurance companies that say that if we allow the market to adjust and, you know, fix this, is totally, totally wrong.
Yeah, and I've heard some ridiculous statements by politicians, such as, well, if you injure your eye, or you've got a break in the leg, you should shop around. Well, if you're sick, yeah, and injured, you don't have to really be all that uncomfortable to make that kind of shopping, yeah, a shopping spree on your computer or making dozens of calls to different providers is ridiculous. I mean, it's insane to think people are going to be shopping when they're, desperately ill and trying to catch their breath. I don't know.
Exactly. The whole concept is wrong. Whenever you need something right away, whether it's healthcare or a pair of shoes, you're not going to have time to shop around. Period.
Yeah.
And like you say, that whole fallacy is just a fallacy. It makes no sense. It's not grounded in any sort of evidence, in any kind of fact.
Yeah, I think a lot of these politicians worship the market as if it's something sacred or godlike, and it certainly isn't in the case of healthcare. It's just the opposite. It's a killer.
Exactly.
It's a killer, that market.
Yes, and people are dying because of that.
Absolutely. Dr. Rogers, how has all this controversy about Obamacare and now this Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, how has it contributed or not to strengthening support for a single-payer universal health care system of some kind here in this country? I note there have been several states that have tried to initiate that without success thus far, California being the most recent state. But has this whole national conversation bolstered the argument that we need some kind of a universal health care system?
Yes, I think over the years, the numbers of people who support single payer has increased. Here in Chicago, there was a study done actually by a medical student at Rush University, where I'm on the faculty, did a study, and they polled members of the Chicago Medical Society, and the majority of physicians in that society support a single payer system. And if you look nationally, it is now the majority of physicians nationally support a single-payer system. And I think there's just a lot of confusion about what single-payer is, which really kind of tempers the support that we should be able to garner. I think people use the word socialism, and single-payer is not a socialist system, but people use that word, and a lot of people get turned off because they react to that word without even learning what single-payer is. But over the years, and now the numbers, like I said, the numbers of doctors and non-physicians who are supporting single-payer has increased.
Dr. Rogers, what do you make about this false start in California where the state Senate passed it, but It stalled in the California legislature due to the Speaker of the House, I believe, who put it up on ice. California would seem one of the more opportune places to run a statewide experiment with millions of people to demonstrate to the country that single payer can work, as it was in Canada when Saskatchewan, the province that first had it, a single payer, provided an example to the rest of Canada, and then Canada's federal system eventually adopted it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what happened in California, and then there was an attempt in Vermont even before California, and they were unsuccessful. You know, it's hard to tell because of the politics why things really fail, but part of the problem is, too, with California is that for them to be able to finance a single payer system, they would have to be able to continue funding partially with Medicaid dollars, and with this new health plan coming out, that would have been more and more difficult to do. And then, you know, it's never clear about who is donating to the campaigns of some of these politicians, and because of that, they may choose to not support something that the majority of people do support but may not benefit them personally. Unfortunately, one of the keys to getting this would be campaign finance reform, but that's a whole nother issue. But for people to start thinking about their constituents and not their political party.
Well said. Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for spending time with us. And what's the web address for Physicians for National Health Program so people can find out what you're working on there?
Wonderful. Yes, it's pnhp.org. And I think it's a very useful site, and it's very, I think, easy to navigate. There's a lot of information there. One of the sites that I really like is what we call Quote of the Day, and that's where Dr. McCann, one of the members, responds to something daily that's happening in the media. So that's a good resource to just keep kind of up to date on what's happening, you know, daily in the current events. But there's a wealth of information there. There's a lot of statistics, a lot of links, so that you have evidence to support the way you support what you want to think.
All right. Dr. Rogers, thanks so much for being here, and we'll stay in touch with you
okay.
and the folks at PNHP.
Thank you for inviting me to talk.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. That's Dr. Susan Rogers, an advisor to the group Physicians for a National Health Program, talking to us tonight from Chicago.